science education and research. It's in a city called Bhubaneswar, which is on the eastern coast of India. And I would like to thank Perimeter Institute for giving me this wonderful opportunity to come and work over here for a period of more than 2.5 months. And so far, it's been a great learning experience. So let me begin by asking a very fundamental question. What is the origin of mass in particle physics? So we know that if we add explicit mass term to the Lagrangian, then they tend to spoil the gauge invariance of the Lagrangian. If we add explicit mass term of the vector bosons, then they don't have gauge, they spoil the gauge invariance, U1 gauge invariance. If we have explicit mass terms for the fermions, then they tend to spoil ST2 gauge invariance. And gauge invariance is something which is very sacred to physics. It's a principle of nature. So if we spoil gauge invariance, we are actually spoiling, creating problems like the theory becomes non-renormalizable and things like that. So what is the answer to this question? Spontaneous symmetry breaking is a way out. What one does is that one has spontaneous symmetry breaking means the Lagrangian still has the symmetry, but the ground state of the theory does not respect that symmetry. So what one does conventionally is to introduce a scalar particle which self-interacts and creates a vacuum of this theory which doesn't respect the symmetry of the Lagrangian. At the semi-classical level, the vector bosons of this of the theory traveling in this asymmetric vacuum tend to acquire masses. With this motivation, let's first ask the question: how does the vector bosons of the electroweak theory get their mass? The standard model of particle physics has a gauge group of SU3c color, SU2 weak, and U1 hypercharge. Under this gauge symmetry, all the particles of the standard model are massless. But if we explicitly break the SU2 W cross U1 Y into a U1 electromagnetism, then the gauge bosons of the electroweak theory acquire mass. However, this requires a scalar particle, and conventionally, what one does is in a minimal standard model is to introduce a fundamental scalar like this, which are complex scalars, and like there are four of them, and give wave to one of them. This is the vacuum expectation value of that wave, and this is the massive scalar excitation around this vacuum, and this is what we call the Higgs field. In this process, this was a big news announced last month about the discovery of a Higgs-like particle by Atlas and CMS. They observed something, a fundamental boson of mass around 125 with a considerable significance. However, its properties are still to be determined. They have not yet found the parity and the spin is also yet to be confirmed. But the Higgs to gamma gamma channel is a very interesting channel to note, because what they found, the event count that they found was quite large than what they expected from a minimal standard model. So this gives some room to physics beyond the standard model, and that means there might be something new apart from the fundamental Higgs. Some other problems of the fundamental Higgs are problems of naturalness, which has to do with renormalization and symmetry. This concept of naturalness was given by Thoft, where he says that he defined a coupling to be natural, where if the coupling goes to zero, then the symmetry of the system is enhanced. The quadratic coupling of the Higgs is not natural. It receives corrections from renormalizations additively. So this is again related to the fine-tuning problems, where there has to be an infinite amount of cancellation between the physics above and below the Planck scale. Then there is a related problem is the hierarchy problem, where we know that the electroweak scale and the Planck scale are separated by some 10 to the power minus 19 order of magnitude. So what is the explanation for it? If there's no explanation, then either we should expect that both the scales should be same, or there is some cancellation, fine-tuned cancellation between physics above and below the cutoff. And one more problem is the triviality problem with a fundamental scalar. A fundamental scalar at tree level, it seems that it is a self-interacting field. But at quantum level, it has been shown by some lattice calculations that in 4-dimension, fundamental scalar is actually trivial. It doesn't self-interact at the quantum level. So if it doesn't self-interact, then it cannot produce asymmetric vacuum for the theory where other fields will acquire mass. So with this motivation, this all suggests that the Higgs sector, which might provide a very good description of low energy physics, but at high energies, it doesn't seem to provide very good explanation. So given the motivation, I'll just talk about the plans. I'll first explain what is the chiasymmetry of the QCD Lagrangian. From the symmetry breaking, how can we give masses to the fundamental particles, which will bring us to the concept topic of technicolor. Technicolor, since it's a strongly coupled theory, we can solve it. We cannot do calculations over there perturbatively. Therefore, we need the gauge gravity duality. I'll be explaining more on that later on. And what I have been doing all this summer, my current project. So let me explain what chiasymmetry breaking is. For a massless fermion, the Lagrangian looks like this, where Q is a doublet of up and down quarks. This symmetry and this Lagrangian is invariant at the global SU2 symmetry. However, if we split the mass term, if we split this term into the left and the right projections using the gamma matrices, then we find that these individual terms also transform under individual SU2, which we call left and SU2 right symmetries. So the total symmetry of the Lagrangian is SU2n cross SU2r, and this is called chiasymmetry of the QCD Lagrangian. Corresponding to these, there are conserved vector and axial vector currents. Now, what if we introduce mass term into the Lagrangian? Clearly, we can see that we can decompose it into a left and right-handed quarks like this. Clearly, this term is not invariant under a global SU2 cross SU2r. However, it is invariant under the diagonal subgroup of the two. And under this group, the vector current is still conserved, but the axial vector is not. And this spoils the chiral symmetry. In fact, the divergence of the chiral current is proportional to the Dirac mass. And this implies that the presence of a mass term breaks the chiral symmetry explicitly. But we can also break the chiral symmetry spontaneously, because we know that in a strongly coupled theory like QCD, quarks and antiquarks have strong interactions. So this strong interaction can lead to the formation of condensates, where the total momentum and angular momentum is zero. However, there is a net chirality. It pairs the left hand and the right hand, a left-handed quark with the antiparticle of a right-handed quark. And this in QCD, this expectation value is non-zero. So if the mass term of the quarks are small, then in the vacuum, then a pair of quark and antiquarks can be produced spontaneously in the vacuum, since they don't require much energy. So the vacuum of the QCD is this, which does not respect the symmetry of the QCD Lagrangian, SU2L cross SU2R. But it still has a vectorial symmetry. So this is the spontaneous breakdown of the chiral symmetry. From Goldstone's theorem, we know that correspondingly there should be three massless Goldstone bosons. So then we look for these bosons. Are they there in nature? In the QCD spectrum, they are not. The lightest one are pions, which are the pseudo Goldstone bosons. They are pseudo because this chiasymmetry is explicitly broken by the small mass terms for the quarks. However, chiral condensates do break the standard model gauge symmetry spontaneously, but since the scale is so small that this fact can be ignored for phenomenological purposes. This is the decay constant of the pion, and this is the electroweak scale. However, this leads us to an attractive idea. If this scale is pushed up to the electroweak scale, then the chiral symmetry breaking can actually induce electroweak symmetry breaking in the standard model. But for that, we need a new strongly coupled interactions, which is like QCD. So this brings us to the topic of technicolor. Technicolor is a SUN gauge theory, where we have a new gauge with their new degrees of freedom, transforming and acting on new degrees of freedom, which transforms the fundamental representation of the SUN gauge group. These new technicolors, like UCD, carry SUNTC plus SUNTC left and right global symmetries, and like the strong, just as in QCD, the low energy, which is around the electroweak scale now, leads to the formation of condensates and their quantum-perturbative vacuum expectation value, and cause chiasmatic breaking in the strongly coupled sector. Now, if the left-handed technique quarks form an SU2 doublet and the right-handed technique quark forms an SU2 singlet, the structure that we have in the Higgs sector, fundamental Higgs sector, then chiral symmetry breaking in the strongly coupled sector will result in electrosymmetry breaking in the standard model. Now, the Goldstone bosons that arise from this chiral symmetry breaking are transmuted through the Higgs mechanism into the longitudinal components of the electroweak gauge bosons, which then acquire mass. However, and the good points are for this that it automatically solves the fine tuning and the hierarchy problem, because in QCD also as shown before, the pion decay constant and the electroweak scale are separated very widely, so there should be an explanation for that also. That explanation is actually given by QCD, because if we set the coupling to the electroweak, the cutoff of the electroweak scale, scale for the QCD scale is set exponentially suppressed, because QCD is a asymptotically free theory. Therefore, the coupling becomes free at the becomes quite perturbatively small at the electroweak scale. So there is no hierarchy problem. There is also no problem of nationalness, because all the coupling over here gets get renormalized multiplicatively, and there's no triviality problem, because there's no fundamental scalar present over here, and all the coupling scales are generated dynamically and therefore naturally stabilized. So, but there are some problems with technical theory also, because the simplest model of a scaled up version of as a scaled up version of QCD, it is not compatible with the precision electroweak data, and therefore can't accommodate, and also because of the problems, it can't accommodate the mass of the heavy quarks and leptons. So what we do is they do is that they modify it into something called a walking gauge theory, in which the coupling runs for some time and then becomes constant for a fixed energy, for fixed domain of energy scale, and then and then again goes to zero, and this coupling and this constancy is over the electroweak scale. So the gauge coupling is strong implies that the conventional tools of perturbative QFT breaks down, and this is where gauge duality becomes useful as a tool. So this is the usual running of the coupling in a QCD-like theory, where the beta function is like negative g squared, and this is the coupling running of the coupling as a function of energy, where we have this walking behavior. So this is what I refer to as the conformal window. However, there can be a small breaking of scale invariance, because this might not be exactly zero over here. This scale variance might lead to the production of a new boson, pseudo-Namo-Goldstone boson, and this boson has a property. There was a paper very recently. In fact, it was published on 4th of July itself, where the PI and some collaborators worked it out. They constructed a theory where this boson incorporated the property the increased Higgs to gamma decay. They said that this boson can actually enhance the increased Higgs to gamma decay rate that they have observed. So before closing this section, I would like to just explain how one can probe this this new physics. Now, prior to LHC, experiments did not offer direct evidence for the nature of the Higgs sector. So it was important to make the best use of all the sources of indirect information that measurements can provide. The most important of these indirect constraints come from the precision measurements of the electroweak interaction parameters, at the tree level, the parameters that are important are the fine structure, mass of the Z boson, and the Fermi coupling. However, if we consider the radiative corrections to the electroweak theory, then we find that three parameters, independent parameters, also become important, and they measure the deviation of the electroweak theory. They actually measure to what extent does new physics contribute to the vacuum polarizations of the electroweak gauge bosons and the photon. So at low energies, particles of this new physics don't appear in the final state. However, they do contribute to the vacuum polarization through amplitudes via internal loops. And this loop might contain fermions or degrees of freedom in the strongly coupled sector. Okay, so let me change the subject now and come up to gauge driver duality. Now, this is an important theoretical tool which was which is important to solve system of strongly coupled dynamics. Originally discovered in the context of ADS-CFT conjecture by Maldacena, it states that a maximally supersymmetric quantum field theory in four dimensions, SUNC quantum field theory in four dimensions is dual to a type 2B superstring theory in a ADS 5 plus S5 background. There's no proof of this conjecture, but there are reasons to believe that it's true because we can match things like correlation functions and certain quantum anomalies which match on both the sides of the theories. However, also this conjecture finds application in other areas also, like quark gluon plasma, where they have this shear viscosity to entropy density value, universal value of 1 by 4 pi for all viscous liquids, and hydrodynamics, where one can measure transport coefficients, high temperature superconductors, and for my case, for my talk on technical. So ever since its discovery, the search of gravity duals for field theory which are more closer to phenomenology became important. By more closer to phenomenology, it means theories that have lesser supersymmetry and are not conformal. As an example is a Maldacena Nunes solution where they consider wrap D5 brains in type 2B background and wrap them on S2 to get an effective field theory in four dimensions. The good property is that it's dual to an n is equal to one four-dimensional field theory and shows confinement and in the infrared and asymptotic freedom. A particular class of deformation of this theory is important for walking gauge theories. And there are some other examples also of backgrounds which are dual to n is equal to one field theory. But I'll be concentrating on the Maldacena Nunes. So the main objective of this talk is to find a field theory, a holographic gravitational description of field theory which is QCD-like, and secondly, it should show chiral symmetry breaking, and most importantly, it should have a walking behavior. So we need a gravitational dual that incorporates all these properties of a four-dimensional field theory. So before that, let me review some of the basics that I'll be needing to explain. First, I'll be talking about the type 2B string theory. A type 2B is a theory of closed strings which contains the following sector. The brackets over here contains two terms. So in a closed string theory, the left hand and the right handed mode decouples. If we consider the variation of the action of a closed string, then we find that there are two kind of boundary conditions can satisfy, either a periodic or anti-periodic boundary condition. So periodic boundary condition are referred to as the Raymon boundary condition, and the anti-periodic as the Nevu-Schwartz. And the plus and the minuses are that you're seeing are the they count the fermions running in that sector, the left or the right sector. So and at the massless and the space-time fermions that one gets from this are from this sector are the NSR and the RNS, and the space-time bosons are obtained from NSNS and RR. The NSNS and RR Raymon-Raymon sector at the massless level contain the graviton, the Kalb-Raymon field, and the dilaton. And for the remote sector are a zero form, a two form, and a four form potential. And so, in the low energy limit, this theory can be described effectively by an action, a type 2b supergravity action, which contains three terms: the NS term, the RR term, and the Chern-Simons term. The NS term it contains a term like the Einstein-Hilbert action. This factor of 2 phi is because we are in the string frame. We can always while transform it back into to get a metric for the Einstein-Hilbert action. This term is the kinetic energy term, for a scalar field living in a curved background, and the H3, F5, F3, F1 are the fields are the kinetic energy terms for a p-form in general a p-form potential living in a curved background. And then we also have the Chern-Simons term for reasons to because so actually this what I've written over here is just the bosonic part of the supergravity action. There's a fermionic part also. So to preserve supersymmetry at the level of the Lagrangian, this term is important. Now let's another topic of P brains. What is a P brain? It's a P. A P brain is a extended object that spans a P dimensional space time and space and sweeps a P plus one dimensional world volume. And they were originally introduced in string theory because if you try to conserve momentum of open strings, that satisfies Dirichlet boundary condition at the endpoint. Then it turns out that it doesn't. There is no conservation of momentum. It is only conserved in the Neumann boundary condition. So to conserve momentum, we needed something which can absorb the momentum that was not conserved, residual momentum. And so that was the motivation for introducing. Now, if we quantize open strings on D brains, then at massless level, we find that the spectrum consists of a Maxwell gauge field. One Maxwell gauge field having p minus one polarization states, and corresponding to each transverse directions, there correspond one massless scalar. So for a p brain, there are living in a d plus one dimensional space time, there are d minus p scalars for each transverse direction. That was for one brain. If we have n coincident brains, then there are n square ground states, correspondingly which will correspond to a UN Yang-Mills theory living on the world volume of this n coincident DP brains. So here's a little schematic. String opening starting from one of the brain can terminate in the same brain, or they can terminate into a different brain. Now, if these two brains are separated spatially, then if we take a look at the mass squared formula, then there are in general no massless states. Actually, they depend upon the distance by which they are separated. But if we coincide them, like if they are coincident, then they are massless level. In the spectrum there is a massless level, and for two brains there will be four such sectors. That is for the gauge fields. How does one get fermions? A stringy picture for the fermions is obtained by intersecting brains, where one has a color brain and a flavor brain. A string running from a flavor brain to a color brain will correspond to a quark, which are oriented strings running from flavor to color, and if we want anti quarks out of it, then what we do is that instead of a flavor brain, we have an anti flavor brain. So all this is known. I just want to before concluding, if you want to study the deep brain action, then this deep brain dynamics, then this is the action for it. There are two terms in this action. The first is the DBI action, and the second is the Chern-Simons action. The DBI action is simply obtained by so for a single point charge which sweeps a line, the action is the integral of the proper time. If you have a string sweeping a world sheet, then the action is just proportional to the integral of the proper area. For a d-dimensional object, for a p-dimensional object sweeping a p plus one dimensional world volume in the space-time, the action is just, we can just extrapolate it, and it's a dv, and we can pull back, and we can write it in terms of a reparameterization in variant form, where gab is the pullback of the metric tensor living in the direct space. But if we have other fields also of the, if we have other fields like BAB of the type 2B supergravity, then that will also come and, over here. And these F and phi that you're seeing over here are the gauge fields and the scalars that live on the world volume of the brain. Okay, so now over here I've included only the B fields. What about the Raymond-Raymond fields? They actually don't contribute to the DVI action, but the contribution is through this Chern-Simons term. Again, whose requirement is because of because we require supersymmetry at the level of Lagrangians. So this is the bosonic part of the action. We also have a fermionic part where this term is important to cancel the variation, supersymmetric variations. Just a little remark: we can if these fields. So alpha prime is a very small number. For our purposes, we'll just ignore this term, and we can expand the entire action. We first leave out. We ignore the Chern-Simons term, and we just take the DBI part of the action and expand the action in terms of alpha prime. So this is the expansion, and if M over here just consists of G, then simplifying it a little bit further gives an action that looks very much like the Yang-Mills action. So whatever that sits outside is just 1 over the Yang-Mills, 1 over Yang-Mills, the coupling, 1 over G Yang-Mills squared. So this I'm just stating as a fact, but later on I'll be explaining why is it. Okay, so that's the basic. Now we look for gravity duals for field theories that have.
Can I ask a question in the last slide?
Sure.
So this is abelian?
No, it might not be because FAB that you have, it's a UN Yang-Mills theory. A UN Yang-Mills theory.
It's U1, right?
Yeah. So you in general, yeah, for yeah, this is for the U1. This expansion that I've done over here is for U1.
Right.
But I have not done the expansion for a, in general a UN theory. So yeah. So let's look for now gravity duals of model with chiral symmetry breaking. So the original proposal was made by Sakai and Sugimoto, where they considered some colored D brains and considered the geometry produced by them. In that geometry, putting the favored brains as probes and looking at the embedding functions. So if the favored brains are separate, then the quark and the anti-quark are, I mean, they both have both the quarks and anti-quarks are present. And they're separate, and thus both the chiralities are there. However, their study showed that the D brains, the two D brains actually merge at some point, and that point would correspond to a quark and an anti-quark in this configuration. And since this is localized in this area, a line running from here to here would require more energy. So, and since it is localized in this area, so we identify this with the chiral condensates. Which implies chiral symmetry breaking, and this is the way they realize a chiral symmetry breaking as a holograph in a holographic fashion. What they considered was large number of NC D5 brains and embedded flavored D8 brains as probes. This system of interacting D8 brains can give chiral fermions, as I explained before, and the spatial extents are as follows: D4 run over the spatial over the Minkowskian direction, the tau direction is and a fifth direction tau, which is compactified into a circle. The D8 and D8 bar brains also run in all the directions except for the tau, so they are transverse to the tau direction. So this is the configuration that one has where the D8 and the D8 bars, they are put at antipodal points, and they run transverse to it. If we compute the embedding functions, then it turns out that this compact direction as a function of rho shrinks and at some point goes to zero where the two D brains merge. This is the holographic manifestation of chiral symmetry breaking. That was the original paper. Now let's look for gauge gravity duals of field theories that have walking behavior in it. So this, the first solution, the solution that we consider over here is the Madlassian-Onnes solution, where one considers D5 brains and large number of D5 brains, and the background produced by them contains two fields, the metric and the Riemann-Riemann three form field strength. So this is the this is a field theory that is effective, and in five plus one dimension. To get an effective field theory in three dimensions, three plus one dimension, one compactifies two of the directions there into a small sphere. If we consider small deformations of this Madlassian-Onnes solution, which was done by Nunes, Papamitriou, and PI, they formed something like this. I mean, the deformation contains some extra unknown functions like k, h, and g. And there are some vibrations also. The functions a and b actually mixes the two sphere with the three sphere. The two sphere is fibered over the three spheres. So, so this deformation, first of all, these functions should satisfy whatever these functions are. They are not arbitrary functions. They should satisfy the equation of motions that come out of the equation of type 2b supergravity. But if you want to preserve supersymmetry in the background, then they also need to satisfy what are known as the BPS conditions to preserve. To get a background that is minimally supersymmetric in four dimensions, that is four supercharges. So the BPS equation look like this. What we first do is to do a kind of change of basis where they introduce five different functions p, q, y, tau, and sigma, which are related to the original functions h, g, k, a, and b by this algebraic quantity. The good thing of this transformation is that we get a set of algebraic equations and just one differential equation for p. If we solve for p over here and substitute back over here, then we can get all the functions q, y, tau, and sigma by this algebraic relation, and hence get the function h, g, k, a, and b, which were originally present in this background, and hence they also solve this type 2b supergravity action and preserve supersymmetry in the four supercharges in the background. So one particular solution of this equation is this, where the approximation that one does is that p should be much greater than q. C and alpha are two integration constants. A good property of the solution is that it makes the dilaton field constant, and for the solution to be consistent, that means for like p is greater than q for all values of rho, cot alpha should satisfy this. It should be much greater than one. That means alpha should be very, very small. So for this solution, one can read off the gauge coupling. So how does one obtain this formula for the gauge coupling? The background created by the D5 brains, and now we put another D5 supersymmetric, consider a supersymmetric embedding of this D5 brain in this background, and expand the metric as I and expand the DBI action as I showed before. In this manner. So whatever that was the coefficient that was sitting outside and integrate over all the extra dimensions, and whatever that was sitting outside will now give the coupling strength. So in for that particular solution, for that particular value of p, the gauge coupling looks like this, where it shows a walking behavior. There are three plots over here. This is a plot for alpha very small, this is a plot for alpha little large, and this is for alpha this is a plot for alpha for alpha large, because we have seen that alpha should be small. Where alpha cot value of alpha should be very small for a walking behavior. So this is a plot for very small value of alpha. It gives a very large walking behavior, a very large conformal window, and this for the smallest. So we have already got a background that has a walking behavior in it. Now we embed D7 and a system of D7 and D7 bar over here as probes. And their special extent is as follows. The D5 sweeps 6 dimensions and leave out and don't span the other theta tilde, phi tilde, and psi and the radial direction. The D7 sweeps all dimensions except for the theta and phi, so they are transverse to them. Now study the embedding. Now we can study the embedding function of this D7 and D5 brains through the DBI, through just the DBI action and not the Chern-Simons term. One finds that one particular solution of this is theta is equal to constant and a phi having a relation like this. Now if we plot phi as a function of theta, we just exactly get the it's not U shape, but it's kind of a U shape where the plus corresponds to the brain and the minus corresponds to a D, anti-brain. I'm showing this figure once again just for the plus part corresponds to a brain coming in this direction and the minus one from this direction, and they smoothly merge at rho is equal to rho zero. And at that point we have this formation, the strings running from the color and the flavor brain localize and therefore form chiral condensates. And so this is the holographic manifestation of a spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking in a walking gauge theory. Now this all, so far everything that I explained has been done before. So how do we deform the background further? So my project was to do the same things for a different kind of background. What these Malesina and Martelli did was to they do a U duality, which is a chain of S and T dualities of a background, and get another background in the same type 2B supergravity. So you start from some solution of supergravity which has some fluxes, and then do a U duality to get back a type 2B supergravity with the fluxes changed. So earlier we had only F3, F5 and H3 were not there. Now after U duality there are some other fluxes also present. So what if these fluxes are there, then how will the embedding of the flavored D7 brains that we were considering originally be changed? So first of all these are the flux, this is the background. Notice that H2 and F5 parametrically depend upon a parameter K2, which takes values from 0 to e to the negative phi infinity, where phi is the Dilaton field, whose value at infinity is a finite value. In the limit that it goes to 0, this background changes back to the original Malesina and Nunez deformed background. And the calculations that we did was for the embedding functions of the favor brain actually coincides with the original value for the limit K2 going to 0. However, we are not finding much change in this. I don't know what the reason is, but I think that the Chern-Simon terms need to have some considerations now, because we have non-vanishing B fields present. So these non-vanishing B fields might contribute to the change in the embedding functions. So let me just summarize. Gauge gravity duality is a tool to study the theory of, it's a very important tool to study a strongly coupled theory, and also provides a explanation for dynamic electroweak symmetry breaking through a strongly coupled sector. Then I studied how to construct gravitational dual of field theories that have chiral symmetry breaking and walking behavior in it. Chiral symmetry breaking for at least two models, where the Sakai-Sugimoto model and the Malesina and the model that was done by my guide Dr. Lilia Angelova. But in the new model, we need some new work to be done, which was not done originally before. That is to investigate the Chern-Simons term and see how it changes the backgrounds, and also to investigate if this new background gives a UV complete quantum field theory, because in the original background we calculated things like the S parameter that I explained as a measure of the physics beyond the standard model. It was coming out to be infinite, and then one had to do some kind of a holographic renormalization to, the parameter was the cutoff dependent. It is still not clear that this new background yields an S parameter which is cutoff independent. That's pretty much it. And I would like to thank my guide, Dr. Lilia Angelova, and Ajay and Mattis for helping me out. Thank you. So if you have any questions.
When you mentioned at the beginning your motivation, the report from the LHC that points out the excess with 2.08 sigma, how does this approach from Bethencourt explain this? I know you referred to that somewhere in your talk.
So this particular model that they have, the pseudo number Boltzmann boson that that results because of the soft breaking of the conformal symmetry so this might not be a exact symmetry, it might be broken, there might be a soft breaking of the scale invariance. So that explicit breaking results in a production of a pseudo number Boltzmann boson, and this is this might be responsible for the increased Higgs to gamma gamma decay rate. This is what these people claim, PI and their collaborators.
So it would add like additional channel into the H gamma gamma reaction, or
it can be. So actually, if you take a look at the Higgs potential, then that potential in the case when lambda is small, then the theory is approximately scale invariant. Now, if the Higgs acquires a vacuum expectation value, then this is no longer, and that's around the electroweak scale, the VW. So in that case, obviously the theory is no longer scale invariant. And on top of that, there's this lambda sitting outside. If the value of lambda is very small, then there's an explicit breaking of the Higgs. So the Higgs can be thought of as pseudo dilaton. Okay. Pseudo number Boltzmann boson is also a dilaton over here, because the breaking is because of a scale invariance. I don't know the exact details of their work, but what they claim is that they construct a holographic model where they have this Randall syndrome kind of construction. They consider two brains, and they have this ADS geometry between them. I don't know the exact details of how they predict it, but this number Boltzmann boson that they have, they are saying, claiming that it can account for an increased Higgs to gamma gamma decay.
I can make a small comment. So the point is just that there is some composite scalar that looks very much like the Higgs, but because it's a different state, it can decay in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that to actually distinguish whether you have a fundamental or composite state, you need to study more decay couplings and various things. You cannot just claim, okay, you observed something, that's in the story.
Yes. Okay.
So there is a room for something else, which could be this whole technique of this pseudo-Boltzmann boson.
Okay.
And in fact, it's been expected in the literature for many decades that it exists, but it's only now that people can actually explore that, because now there are models that are coupled for strong coupled dynamics. Whether there is or not, at least they are coupled. Before there were not, because everything was preserved. So only now one can address such issues.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I didn't quite understand all the approximations you made, but why is it okay to neglect the Chern-Simons term?
It is not okay to neglect, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Now I will be, although the time is over, but still I'll be continuing with the project. So that term is now important. Originally, it was not important because the Chern-Simons term looks like integral over summation n cn e to the power b. And then there is plus f, but let's ignore it. and this integration is to be, and these are forms, differential forms. So this integration needs to be done on the world volume of the D brain. So I have a D7 brain. That means this integration has to be done on a world volume of a D8 brain, of a on a D8 on a dimensional space. If you don't have this term, then all the terms that all the forms that we have over here are either C0, C2, or C4. We need at least a differential form of the of an 8 form to have a non-zero integral. Okay. So now, if you have the B term present, then if you expand it, you have something like 1 plus B, wedge B, things like these. So you can always have, for example, in our case, C2 was non-zero. So for with C2, we can have terms like, and this is an 8 form, C2. This is an 8 form field. So this integration might not be zero. We have to actually check.
Could you remind me what B is?
B are the Kalb-Ramond field, which are okay. So background is sourced by three kind of terms, right? The B fields, the dilaton, and the graviton, the metric. So so let me go back to the. So this is a spectrum of type 2B supergravity, type 2B string theory. So these are the B fields that source the background. And and in the new background, they are non-zero. So originally, since they were zero, so there wasn't any term like this. So but now I have to consider that also, because I'm not seeing much considerable change.
Can you look at your background though and guess that that term would be non-vanishing? Or I mean, the brain lives in a certain set of directions, and
yes,
the B's and the C's sort of have various components. And you can often very quickly guess which are the important terms, which are not.
Yeah. So in the background. In the new background, C2, there is C2, there is C4, there is no C0, so there is no contribution from this term.
Okay.
But these two needs to be checked, because I don't know if B2, which B2 is 0 or not.
So that's where he is now, but checking the property assignments that he already studied the DBI part. Okay, any other questions? Okay, let's thank again to Mashu.